The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies feline with a death wish. E right didn't help. No name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome into the show. And, you know, on a day after the Astros don't play and there's no NBA Finals to talk about, we always try to figure out how we're going to start the show. And thankfully, with the Texans practicing, it's official. Is CJ going to throw? Watch. That's what the reporters are on today. Is CJ going to make an appearance? He's there, but is he going to actually warm up and throw the football and participate in drills? As it stands now, they've seen him hand off the football. No Mixon, no Pierce. They're not there today. We know Mixon last seen in a boot. Damian Pierce just not there. I guess it's excused, but I think it's voluntary, so there's no real issue there. But there it is. CJ handing the ball off. We'll see if that shoulders well enough after he put it on the strain of practicing jumpers at Toyota Center to actually throw the football today. So we'll let you know when we know where your starting quarterback is and if he is healthy enough to throw to some of the new guys and along with Nico Collins. Other than that, there was the news that was actually kind of expected, and it plays into the article we highlighted last week that ESPN put out, or maybe it was courtesy of the AP, that it was a bettor who was threatening Lance McCullers and his family. And a lot of the players featured in that article that we talked about discussed how the prominence of betting, sports betting, has led to these interactions with fans who have decided to get into their DMs and tell them how trash they are. We talked about last week Naz Reid and his back and forth with a fan who pretty much called Naz Reid trash, and Naz Reid responded with, "Well, I'm going to make $100 million, so how trash can I actually be?" And Naz Reid had time, so over the course of like 3 or 4 days as that series was ending and the Thunder were putting away the Wolves, Naz Reid and that fan went back and forth after Game 4 and after Game 5. And I mentioned Naz Reid not because of that, but we will have our second-to-last edition of the Scapegoat Rankings this day because it's the finals on Thursday, so this won't encompass just the conference finals. We'll do an entire playoff scapegoat rankings because it's about that time where articles are coming out about guys who either aren't as liked as we might have thought by their teammates, guys who are available for trade, and other things of that sort. So we'll get to that today on the show. But back to the Lance McCullers situation. Lance actually pitches today against Paul Skeens in Pittsburgh, but just turns out it's an overseas guy who wasn't thrilled with Lance's performance that fateful day and decided to, I don't know if he decided to get drunk because of Lance's performance, but he was under the influence and he sent some messages and he asked for an apology to be sent towards Lance because, you know, I'm just joshing, man. Just needed you to pitch better, so I needed to take it to an extreme where the police got involved and our resident watchdog said, so Lance McCullers, his issue took precedent over, let's say, I don't know where he got the number 200,000 from, but yes, probably Lance McCullers got pushed up to the front of the line because he's Lance McCullers. We can acknowledge there is privilege, which comes with fame, but that appears to have been sorted out. And was it a credible threat? Seems unlikely, but how is Lance to know? And that's why security was hired to protect his family. But thankfully, I will say, it doesn't appear like his family was under any real danger. It's just some drunken clown who took out his frustrations on Lance McCullers. And players have said that has been a real thing for them, simply because a guy lost out on a bet. And that's kind of how the world works right now. But it looks like his family, thankfully, was never under threat and is no longer under threat. So that's a good thing there. But he'll go against Paul Skeens tonight in Pittsburgh. It's actually a pretty early start. I think it's 5:40 for us. So if you're heading home in, you know, your regular work day, if you're trying to get home from the game, don't stop off at HEB or wherever you go. If you're running errands, if you don't want to miss first pitch, so head on.
Get those bets in early.
Well, that's not what I'm saying. I would say lean Skeens if that's what you want to do. But if you're not betting, you just want to see your Astros after they didn't play yesterday. Gotta get in front of the TV a little early. I think it's 5:40 first pitch against the Pirates in Pittsburgh. The Pirates stink, as they always do. Paul Skeens doesn't get a lot of run support, so maybe Lance will have a good day. Struck out. He's got high strikeout totals in his last couple outings, so maybe that continues against a Pittsburgh lineup that's not good, and particularly when their best pitcher is on the mound. So it all trends towards an Astros tightly contested game that they may find a way to win. Just simply they scratch across a couple runs while the Pirates don't do that at all. But you got to get home to watch to see.
Astros win 2-1. That kind of
That's the Paul Skeens.
That's the only
experience.
Game they win apparently
right now.
Or it's either win 2-1 or lose 14-3.
Yeah. So if we're judging by what happened in that Tampa series specifically, while Lance isn't one of their top starters, but we throw in the Paul Skeens trend where he doesn't get a lot of run support, maybe a 3-2 Astros win. That feels like right in line with what we've seen so far. Or as you said, The Pirates run into the Astros' inability to shut anyone down when Fromber and Hunter aren't on the mound. So Lance gives up 10, and it's a 10-2 final. We will see, because if the Astros are giving up runs, they're not competing because they're not going to put up an 11 spot.
No, I don't think they've won
a high scoring game.
I mean, they probably have.
They probably scored a lot of runs in one game, but if it was a real back and forth.
Yeah.
Have they been able to do that?
They haven't needed to.
Yeah.
And gotten it.
Yeah. They haven't been in a lot of, wow, this game's going 4 hours because
old school Big 12 football over here.
That's right. They're not doing that. They're playing 1994 Big 10 football. If that's how they're going to win a game. The Astros are growing the grass out really long to play baseball.
Kirk Ferentz is like, I love these Astros.
Yeah. Kirk Ferentz is the type. Like, if you get him into a slugfest, he'll find a way to win. But if you got too much speed, then he's going to get run off the field. And we're talking about prime Kirk Ferentz. And because current Kirk Ferentz, you know, they're still kind of the same. You know, I mean, they don't really compete against the big time schools in the Big Ten. And we'll get into some college football because ESPN has their metric where they evaluate all the teams, and it's just they created their own version of content. So what they did was they evaluated all the teams through their own analytics and metrics, and then they put their analysts on it and go, hey, which teams are undervalued and which teams are overvalued? Do you guys want to agree with our own personal metric or disagree with our own personal metric, and then we'll have an article about it.
Put numbers in a machine. Agree or disagree.
Yeah. Who's overvalued here? And several teams close to our hearts are on the overvalued list.
Oh, wow.
For different reasons.
That's kind of normal, though, for teams close to our hearts.
That's true. But
that happens more often than
but for I think it's like a list of four or five, and it's the Canes, the Longhorns, and the Aggies, all overvalued.
I mean, but historically, that's true.
Yeah, according to the ESPN analyst, so maybe they're just going by history as opposed to actually with the numbers.
Since 2010, you're right.
Yeah.
9 out of 10 years.
Good job, guys. Really going out on the limb. So
last year is the only year you're wrong.
Well, then and the year before, was Texas highly ranked going into 2023?
Probably.
So they were right there, too. Made the actual playoff, the real one that you always like to reference. So we'll get into that. As I mentioned, we'll get into our scapegoat rankings. So we do have some stuff to get to. And, of course, any news that comes out of Texans camp we'll get to as well. Also, Kelly Eco of The Athletic is reporting about some Rockets news regarding potential trades and guys who are on the move and are valued on that Rockets roster that other people might want. And there is a backup plan, apparently, if Steven Adams leaves. So we'll get into that. So plenty to get to here as we just get started. It's me and Sean. I saw Paul in here. Is his electricity out? Is that why he's in the building?
Yeah. He needs electricity to prep. So.
Oh.
It's right there.
You need electricity and air conditioning to do your job?
He never said air conditioning.
I think it's an appealing part of the thing, too, though, because we all know it's Houston in June. AC, always important. So Paul's in here early, so he's getting prepped for his show. And he won't join us, obviously, but he'll be here on time. So we'll get into the rest of our show in a little bit. But first, we're going to break.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So we have our answer, at least for now. CJ Stroud not throwing. He was in drills for quarterbacks that didn't involve throwing, but when it was time for that, he stepped aside, and it was Davis Mills who took those first reps. So, Sean asked a question during the break, and it led me to look up the dates for Texans OTAs and mini camps, at least through June. So they have a day off tomorrow, and then on Thursday, they're back with OTAs, and then they have a mandatory mini camp where you would expect, I guess, Dameon Pierce to be back if there isn't a real issue with him and the Texans. 10th and 11th, that's when mandatory mini camps are underway, so next Tuesday. So if C.J. Stroud's not throwing by next week, do we take it seriously? Or when the Texans tell us it's no big deal, we're like, okay, we'll take that at face value. Or do we at least ask, hey, what's the actual problem? Yeah, you can tell us he'll be ready by training camp, which really would be the only thing that would matter. And frankly, does C.J. Stroud, he probably does need a training camp with a new O.C. If it was a O.C. he had already worked with, then I would say, hey, just get him ready for the regular season. But you would like to get real reps with your new wide receiving group and your new offensive coordinator. And if he's going to have more responsibility, according to everything that's being said, he's going to have a lot more on his shoulders. You'd like to see actual physical reps take place. But training camp, the start of that is when you say, we'd like to know that he's able to throw a football without you being worried about inflicting any pain or added injury to whatever is going on right now. But if he's not throwing by the 11th, he's just sitting there watching Davis Mills and Graham Mertz throw the football, at least after that practice, we should ask the question, what is the actual injury, I think?
Yeah, just like what's actually up. I agree that until training camp, which is, the 29th or something, I don't know how much this actually matters. But if he doesn't throw and the end of July starts coming, then it becomes a discussion point again of, so is this guy going to throw it? Is he good now? So I think just for our own sake, we should I think by the end of mandatory minicamp, it doesn't have to be day one or two of mandatory minicamp, but by the end of the next, I guess, session of the offseason program, I want to see him at least tossing a ball around.
Yeah, you just type in his name right now and on Twitter, and you see anyone who's out there going, not throwing, he's not throwing, he's not throwing. So certainly the reporters out there who go out there every day are taking notice. And then I guess we'll get a question asked of D'Amico about it, and he'll probably say what he said before: we're not concerned. And maybe we're all a little shell-shocked by what the Astros are up to, but we don't need to hold the Texans to that same standard. But just as you said, I would love for this not to be an issue and just – for it not to be a story we have to focus on. Because you know what? He actually is fine as opposed to there's some pain when he tries to throw a football. Or whatever the reason is, they've decided he's not going to throw.
Yeah, because the weird offseason like quarterback injury has happened before. Like sometimes guys do, whether it's in the offseason workouts or offseason, you know, where they're just throwing routes against air to receivers. Like we have had guys come back and be like, oh, their shoulders actually kind of messed up when they're coming into camp and they need to rest some more. And then now it is what you laid out where training camp actually is very valuable for CJ Stroud and a Texans offense that has a new play caller and a bunch of, other than Nico Collins, really all their top receivers or who you expect to be top receivers are going to be new faces. So I think that right now, still not a big deal, but the longer we go and the closer we get to the end of mini camps, it starts to become a little bit bigger and bigger of a deal.
Yeah. You just hope it's as small as they're making it out to be and we can move on. But as of now, your starting quarterback has not thrown a football in OTAs today.
If you had to start a game today, who would start?
Ooh, that's the question.
That's what you asked.
That's the question.
DeMeco Ryans.
That's what we need a muckraker to ask after practice today. Yeah. Davis, coach, if you had to play a game today, could CJ play? And let's see what he said. Of course, he'd be like, come on. Of course, he'd be like, come on.
You saw him shoot jump shots.
Yeah.
His arm worked.
Yeah. Hey, I know I saw him shoot jumpers. I just haven't seen him, you know, throw a pass. That's all.
Yeah, I'm not asking if the Rockets need some bench minutes.
Yeah, so. I'm not looking for a spot-up shooter for the Rockets. I'm looking for a guy who, if needed, could play quarterback for the Texans today in a real game. Not even a real game. Could he play quarterback for the Texans in a joint practice?
If the Hall of Fame game was today,
yeah.
Could he play?
If an opponent was coming to town just for practice, could he play in that? You know, he won't even be touched. That's part of the whole. Uh-huh. That's part of the appeal of joint practice. Could he play in that? That's what you do. You don't ask him about a game. Hey, coach, could CJ participate in joint practices if one was today?
Yeah,
just to throw him off a little bit.
Whatever the Lions who they I know they announced that they scheduled joint practice with someone.
It don't matter as we get closer, but as of now in June, it really doesn't. But yeah, if anyone who happens to ask questions at practice, if I can just send it to you through the ether, with the force. Yeah.
Have Cody Stutes ask.
Yeah. Hey, you got Cody's number. Text. Hey, Cody taking prompts from you.
Just randomly texting him. Ask DeMeco if it's joint practices, could CJ play?
Yeah. Cody's like, are you kidding? I have to deal with these people every day. I'm not asking that question. No one's got interest in asking that question, but there we are. Still not throwing. So be it. Okay. Before we get to break, let's get to this. I mentioned this in the first segment that there has been some reporting by Kelly Eco of The Athletic on some potential Rockets moves, and it's more about who on the roster teams may be interested in, because you never want to put the local team in a spot where you're saying, well, this guy's being shopped. So Cam Whitmore is a guy we've talked about quite a bit, not getting a lot of minutes, and the quote that remains memorable is the one where he was asked about his prospect of playing after having a good game. He goes, it doesn't really matter what I do. And those words were reported back to Ime, and Ime Udoka a couple of times referenced Cam and what he needs to do. He says Cam Whitmore knows what he needs to do, get on the floor. And then it even lasted to the end of the year where he, at their end of the year presser, where he said, yeah, I've heard Cam, and I'm a little surprised by that, because we let him know exactly what he needs to do to get on the floor. So that is a guy that, according to Kelly Eco, opposing teams and franchises are looking at as someone they can maybe pry from the Rockets. And of course, it'll come down to what is Cam Whitmore worth? How much are the Rockets willing to, or how much negotiation are the Rockets willing to do to get an asset back? Or is that someone they feel like they'll take a second round pick, which is under the value, certainly, of where they drafted him. Now, he dipped in the draft. He was like in the early 20s, I believe, when he was drafted, somewhere around the early to mid-20s. So
I think he was number 20.
Okay, so he wasn't a lottery pick, but he was a guy with lottery pick talent. So if it comes to the point where they're trading him for a couple seconds, because I'm not sure anyone's giving the Rockets a first for Cam Whitmore right now, because first-round picks are held in high esteem until they're actually drafted. Like, the possibility, even if you're picking 25, for whatever reason, it means like the pick is more than an actual player.
Like a guy who is the 10th pick last year, you know? Like,
yeah.
It is a weird...
Yeah, once he put on a uniform, he decreases in value. Like, it's a car, like you drove him off the lot.
It's like driving it off the lot.
Yeah.
If you try to trade... I mean, even like the third pick in the draft... At the draft, you probably could have gotten more than once you take the player and it's Reed Shepard. Now it's like, doesn't get you as much.
Exactly. So this is from the article. A handful of teams have inquired about the availability of sparingly used wing Cam Whitmore.
Ouch.
It's rough. League and team sources said. So it goes into his inability to find a spot in a rotation and all the stuff I just mentioned. He's voiced this displeasure about not being able to play. Of course, you shoot the Rockets and him some bail. There's still some optimism about what he can become, all that stuff. But Whitmore and his representation aren't seeking a trade, but just know that teams are out there sneaking around, seeing what they'd have to give up for Cam Whitmore. He's one of those names that people are going to say is the most attainable of the Rockets players. All the other guys outside of Amen are guys you might put in a trade to acquire someone when they do all their mock trades. But Cam is the one where could you get him for a veteran on a low salary? Would it take a pick or two to get him? He's the guy who seems like, at least people always want to say, he's the most likely to go.
It's unfair to him because he's way better than this player, but he's the Ty Washington, Josh Christopher, Usman Garuba of like, hey, took you in the first round. Again, he's better than all those guys, but things didn't really work out. We're going to part ways because those guys couldn't really hack it on a pretty crappy team and immediately fell out of the league. I think Cam Whitmore, if you could have just kind of transported him back to the Stephen Silas Rockets, like he would have found the court.
Yes,
on that team. He would have actually probably would have been like the fourth leading scorer or something. But I think that's the ultimate kind of, I guess, the end of the Cam Whitmore story here is that either he's a small part of a big deal. Maybe he's a small part of a Kevin Durant deal. He's the kind of like extra little throw-ins just to get up to
make the Suns feel like they got something.
Well, and also to get to $50 million.
Yeah, you got to make salaries work and all this.
Or, like you said, he could be a piece that just gets moved to more or less open up a roster spot.
Yeah, yeah. You might take a pick or two back, and I mean second-round picks. Or maybe, as you said, it is something where it helps the salaries work and also – the Suns can tell themselves, hey, we got a good young player out of this.
Hey, not only did we get, pick 10 and whichever young guy, Jabari Smith, but we also got a young shooting guard.
Untapped potential.
Yeah.
Because we don't have enough shooting guards in the roster.
Develop them to be our sixth man. And when I say sixth man, I mean sixth shooting guard.
Yeah, we have plenty. One who we want to go. Who won't go.
Yeah, one who inexplicably wants to be here.
Yeah, and there's another one we got two who want to be here.
For some reason. The only two people on this basketball team that want
to
be here.
Yeah, and one we'd love to get rid of, but we can't. So let's bring in another guy who we're going to have to find minutes for. And speaking of that, you mentioned the Kevin Durant thing. Even in that same article, they talk about what the Rockets and Suns are discussing. And apparently the Suns have called the Rockets a couple times. So I do like it's being positioned as the Suns are calling the Rockets on these deals. It was written since the conclusion of the season. Houston has fielded several calls from Phoenix. So Phoenix is the aggressor, at least according to The Athletic and Kelly.
And they want their picks back.
Yes,
right?
They want the number 10 pick. The important thing for Phoenix in any trade with the Rockets is they want control of their picks back, starting with the number 10 pick in this upcoming draft. And the Rockets could meet a price for Phoenix, but as Phoenix continues to lower their asking price, but right now there still remains doubt that anything will get done.
Yeah.
Involving Kevin Durant and the Rockets.
I was going to say, for Durant, I would say like the 10th pick and then maybe one other, or not maybe, and then one other Suns pick. And that's, they're probably not getting three of their own picks back just because it's so valuable because look at them. Look at the Suns.
Yep.
They have a team that missed the play-in this year and have no means to actually improve their team because you have all their first-round
picks. Yeah, I would not be surprised if the Rockets aren't even offering Suns picks. Hey, you know, we're pretty good. We're going to be picking in the 20s.
Like one of our
picks? You want our picks? That's how it'll work out for
us. Maybe you could get a Cam Whitmore.
It doesn't help the Suns that Kevin Durant wants out because they made it pretty clear they were shopping him when he didn't want to go. So now, you don't want me? I don't want you. So now they're not operating in a position from strength. It is the one thing you could maybe shoot Nico Harrison some bail for. He wanted to do it privately because he knew once you open it up to trading Luka, it's death if you don't get a deal done. This is to a lesser extent, of course. We know caveats. You should have got more. Understood all that stuff. I get it. But I get the fact you want to keep it quiet. The Suns weren't able to, or maybe weren't all that interested in it, considering another big name was on the other side. They're trying to acquire Jimmy Butler. So it was pretty open that Kevin Durant was in trade talks. Now that it's clear that they wanted him gone, he wants to be gone, and they're operating not from a position of strength, and that's why the Rockets can keep waiting for them to call and asking them to lower their asking price, because the Rockets can position themselves as, hey, we're not desperate to have Kevin Durant. We're a pretty good team. Sure, we'd love to have him, but we're not going to rip up what we think is a good future for him.
Yeah, again, all your picks are so much more valuable.
Yeah, yeah, we'd rather have
the 29 pick that we have.
Yeah, when Kevin Durant's awesome. Either 40-something playing for someone else or retired, and Devin Booker is probably gone, how much will that pick be worth? We're not giving that back to you.
Yeah.
Take these picks in the 20s and be happy with it. But the Suns, at least right now, are putting on a brave face and at least asking for 10, it looks like, which is their own. So we'll see how that plays out. We're just getting started with this offseason stuff. But the recent reporting from The Athletic is the Rockets and Suns are still talking, and the Suns are the team making all the calls, at least right now. All right, we'll go to break with that. We will continue to talk some basketball because we'll do our scapegoat rankings. We haven't done that in a little bit. As the NBA Finals are a couple days away, now it's time to blame people and ask, are you the reason why we didn't make the finals? That's what teams are doing, and they're doing it by leaking information. Players are talking to reporters about why Karl Anthony Towns wasn't a good fit. And we know, we talked about it earlier, that a couple players from the Cavs are maybe not on the trade market, but the Cavs aren't unwilling to trade them. So it's that time of the year. So we'll get to that when we come back.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Final thing on that Kevin Durant situation. Sean brought it to my attention, at least reminded me, that the Suns are prioritizing acquiring a center in any discussions involving Kevin Durant. So, Jock Landale, you did a podcast earlier about how you struggle with lack of playing time. You want to go to Phoenix? Maybe you'll start there. And you know the area well.
Yeah. So, hard for the Rockets to find a center to trade for Kevin Durant. Obviously they have one that could get a trade done yesterday, but you won't.
You won't, yeah.
won't do that.
That won't be the guy.
But, so. And then Adams is a free agent, if I'm
he is.
Correct. And then,
Jock Landale's the one remaining.
I mean,
it's going down, is what you're saying?
29-year-old Jock.
It's going down. Also, if they cannot bring back Steven Adams, Brooke Lopez is on their radar as well. The guy they tried to acquire when they brought in Fred VanVleet.
Former Almost Rocket. Yeah.
Yes. So he is still someone that they hold in high regard, despite a couple years later and getting older and looking like he's getting older on the floor. So maybe Brooke Lopez is your backup center.
Do you think Dylan Brooks would be like, man, am I glad to see you. You spurning the Rockets made me an extra, like, $12 million?
That sliding door stuff is real. Just think, if Brooke Lopez had decided he'd rather be in Houston. Dylan Brooks, I don't know where he'd be right now, but he wouldn't be making 80 over
yeah,
four.
It was reported that he would be making 16 a year, and then when Brooke Lopez
he got that
bowed out, they basically like spread it around a little bit, and he got bumped up to like 20.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. I'd love him. If there's a guy who left.
Like when guys have to give up, some guys have to give up like $500,000 for their number. If they want, because another guy already has it on the roster.
House.
Yeah, yeah. You should be banking bankrolling Brooke Lopez's next home.
Yeah,
wherever he wants
place
it to be.
In River Oaks.
Yeah, wherever he wants one. Honestly, as far as how much money we're talking, what's an extra $16 million, maybe around there.
Around there, yeah.
For what? For Brooke Lopez going. Actually, I want to stay in Milwaukee.
Yeah, you know what? Never mind. I've to lose in the first round a couple times.
Yeah, $16 million. Maybe the difference between for Dylan Brooks, just because Brooke Lopez said no initially. Okay, Brooke Lopez won't go on our scapegoat rankings. He simply wasn't good enough to qualify. Sorry to be said. I mean, at one point, Brooke Lopez was a big-time contributor on a finals team. He's not that anymore. But these guys, in different ways, were expected to help their teams at least go further than they did. So let's begin our scapegoat rankings.
Every team needs someone to point to when, well, things go wrong.
I'm just a patsy.
Someone to take the blame when no one else will.
If y'all got a crew, you got to have a fall guy in the crew.
It's time for Del Olalea to decide who is this team's scapegoat.
Yeah, we're all trying to find the guy who did this.
And since this is for the entire playoffs, we have to reach back into the first round. And we are not going to get after this individual anymore than just to mention, because we've done this already. But Jalen Green, he was one of the initial scapegoats on our scapegoat rankings for his performances. You all know, what, you want to say 6 out of 7 games he was a non-factor? Maybe I give him some bail and maybe say 5. But either way, disappointing outside of his game 2. He also mentioned the lights are too bright for him after game 1. So he has that on his resume as well. But Jalen Green is on the list. You can throw Kristaps Porzingis, who Celtics fans started calling Zombie Porzingis because of his mystery illness, which was initially brought to the forefront in March, and then it popped up again during the playoffs. He wasn't the same guy. Now, this is a guy who missed a lot of time in last year's playoffs. The Celtics were able to overcome it thanks to other teams dealing with injuries. They weren't able to overcome his absences even when he was on the floor. So he makes the list, and he may be on the move. Maybe the shelf life on Porzingis is 1.5 years, and now he's going to be gone. And while this guy was a fine number 2 in that Rockets series, he was not capable of being a number 1 other than one night, and that goes to Jimmy Butler. He had the great, but game 3, because the Warriors were operating on the don't let us get one, because if we get one, then Steph may be back for game 6. I have my doubts about that, but that's what they were selling. Jimmy Butler played well in game 3, did not play in an assertive manner in 4 or 5, and Warrior fans were asking, we got to pay this guy, what, $110 million over the next 2 years for this?
Yeah, a number 2 who can't become a number 1.
And in some cases, isn't all that interested in being a number 2. Because I play the right way. I'm going to make sure all my guys get involved.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Buddy Hield's the number.
That's cool when Quinn Post isn't on your team. And as you said, Buddy Hield, while he was great in game 7 against the Rockets, you can't depend on Buddy Hield to be a number 2 option on a night-to-night basis. That's what Jimmy's for. He cannot elevate himself to number 1. So we'll see if that particular trade and that extension is really the death of the Warriors. I wouldn't even call it a dynasty anymore, but whatever their current era is with Steph.
Competing winning.
Yeah, we will see if that's the death of it until Giannis says he wants to be a Warrior and then all hell breaks loose. Don't think that's not a possibility. We'll see how that goes. Let's go to the combo of Garland and Allen, the two guys for the Cavs who appear to be guys the Cavs would be willing to move for the right trade. Giannis, anyone? So Jared Allen criticized for his inability to be effective in the playoffs as a big man.
Two straight years
that's happened. And was he healthy the year they got beat by the the Knicks in round one? I don't remember. We're talking about now 3 seasons ago because they weren't great in that series. The Knicks surprised and beat them, I think, in that series as well. And now we have Garland, who was banged up. The high point of his playoff run was telling people that our offense is pretty good because we just attacked Tyler Hero. He didn't play the rest of that series. They didn't need him. And then he was banged up throughout the series against the Pacers. So everyone's hurt, but certainly his, I guess you might call it turf toe, hampered him. And now he's a guy, small guard, who was injured in the playoffs. So that immediately goes, hey, can we improve on this?
Yeah.
And so those guys have been looked at by maybe not the Cavs specifically, but at least reporting around the Cavs as guys who could be on the move. And when you look at having the best record in the East and going out the way you did, you got to find some people. You're not going to blame Donovan Mitchell because what's the point? He will score and score a lot. He's never been out of second round, but he's your franchise player. You're not going to throw him on the fire. There's a couple guys you get to first before Donovan Mitchell catches his. Although you look at his history, there are some spectacular playoff games. He just maybe isn't a guy who can elevate a team past the second round. That may just be his ceiling. Can he be? Then you ask the question, can Donovan Mitchell be the best player on a title team? So far, the answer is no.
Yeah, if I'm the Cavs, just given the state of what we think the East will be next year, I think I keep it pretty stable, or at least as stable as I can. But you bring up a good point where Donovan Mitchell does feel like he kind of hits a ceiling of his abilities, and it is like, maybe make a conference finals one of these years, get the right matchup.
This year.
Yeah. And I would say if I'm the Cavs, I'd be banking on by the time we're ready to make the finals, Donovan Mitchell won't be the best player on the team. It'll be Evan Mobley.
That's the hope.
That's why I'd keep it pretty stable. I'd listen on Allen. I wouldn't listen on Garland, to be honest. I think Garland's good.
Yeah, I do too.
It's a little bit of the doubt that I have in Donovan Mitchell being able to run an offense like that. That's when they lost the Pacers series because he couldn't be the point guard for the Cavs.
I guess the fear is you looked at Portland where you had two small guards who weren't particularly good defensively. And what's your ceiling? Their ceiling was one Western Conference Finals, and that was the end of that. They had to break it up. So we'll see what the Cavs do after their 60-plus win season. This one hurts because there's a social video about me talking about him, but Julius Randle goes on the list. He disappeared in that Thunder series far too often. And even when you look at some of his numbers later in the series, either he would have one half that was pretty good, or like I think it was a game five, he put up numbers, but the game was long.
Yeah.
Over.
He was good in the second half of a game blowout. They're down 30.
Yeah, he was putting up empty numbers. So he goes on the list then. He is a guy who looked like he was well on his way to like a 4-year, $160-plus million deal, considering he had a player option. Now the question is, when there's not a lot of money available, is he someone who will just take the player option and wait till 2026? Or maybe he and the Wolves have an understanding that they're going to give him an extension, which is funny because they traded Cat because the finances of keeping Cat were too much, and they made the deal to get rid of him because it would cost less, and now Randle may be asking, maybe not for cap money, but big money.
Yeah, and it's to the point where I'm thinking like, could he be the guy in a Suns trade for Kevin Durant?
Team in with Devin Booker?
Seems like a guy the Suns would be like, hell yeah, we love Julius Randle. Remember all the good games he played? And everyone would go, well, what about the bad ones? Matt Ishbia would not care about that. But yeah, I think Julius Randle, he did a good number, I'd say, considering what we thought of him at the start of the playoffs, of this guy's like almost historically bad as a leading option or as a top option for a playoff team on offense. He did beat back that narrative a little bit, but he did, again, kind of hit the wall of like, there's a level you need to get to be able to do it against the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals. And Randle couldn't quite do it.
And you mentioned the Suns. He and Booker were teammates at Kentucky. apparently they like each other, so that might be something he would be interested in. And we know the Wolves are interested in Kevin Durant. At least that's what was reported around the All-Star, around the trade deadline, and now recently as well, that the Wolves may be interested in him. So that could be an option, a swap along with picks or whatever you need to do to make that work. So he's on the list. We haven't put a coach on the list, period, throughout these playoffs. Maybe J.J. Redick caught a little bit for not resting guys, not playing bench players in a half.
Playing the five-man lineup for 24 minutes.
Yes, I think we did mention him there. But as far as a guy losing his job, it's not us. He just makes this list because people are talking about him. Tibbs is the guy who people are questioning, not just how he runs out his lineups in the regular season, but also his offense. There are thoughts that even if he stays, he needs to hire someone who can implement a better offense, that if you're going to keep Kat and Jalen Brunson together, that you can't have it be so ISO-dependent, particularly for Jalen Brunson, but also for Kat. Kat's a great outside shooter. Should he be a guy who is on the move? A little bit. I mean, we're not going to make him a movement shooter, but you can set a down screen for Kat and have Kat open for a shot. There wasn't a lot of that in their offense. It was a lot of, hey, Jalen, pound the ball into the floor for 20 seconds, and if you don't get anything, throw a grenade to someone and see if they make a shot. So there are some questions about Tibbs' offensive acumen, and maybe an OC, we don't normally say that about basketball, is needed there, or maybe Tibbs needs to go. A lot of people I've heard say that voice is a stale one, and the Knicks need a new voice. I don't think they're firing Tibbs.
That'd be crazy.
I don't think it's happening, but maybe there needs to be some innovation on the offensive side of the ball. I think they're more roster limited than coach limited. They're just, you got two guys on your roster making a lot of money here who are one-way guys, and that's hard to do in the NBA right now.
And like you said, the one way that both those guys go, it's not being maximized because they don't ever really interact with each other, that your two best players don't make it hard on defenses by running a pick and roll together, by doing dribble handoffs like Jokic and Murray will do. Like, there's just not the interplay between your two, you know, big dogs on offense. And then, yeah, on defense, they're both guys that get targeted.
Yeah, it's tough to win that way.
He did start playing more guys, though.
He did. He waited to the playoffs, so who knows if those guys would have been better served playing the regular season, so there's more cohesion. He waited, and those guys gave them good minutes because the starting five was one of the worst since, like
ever.
Particularly in the last 20 years, they're the second worst starting five in the playoffs ever.
Yeah.
I think it was like one.
Or to make the, I think to
make the conference finals.
Make the conference.
It was like, obviously, you look at what the Heat did, they had to be worse than the Knicks this year. But there's a team from 08 is the only team that's worse to have a starting five. I forgot who it was, what team it was, but Tom Haverstraw, formerly of ESPN, had that stat, did all the research there. And we've talked a lot about Kat. We haven't talked about him the way this guy has, and this comes from New York, so you can expect a certain tone. This is from the fan in New York on Karl Anthony Towns.
The biggest issue that the Knicks have going forward to get to the next level is the fact that they waited and waited and waited to go all in on a couple of guys, and the biggest one being Karl Anthony Towns. And they went and they traded for him, and he's making $50 million a year, and at the core, he's a loser. That is their biggest problem. The guy is a loser. He's a losing player. He complains. He is soft. He shows you flashes where he's the best player on the court. Not enough. He doesn't play enough defense. He bitches and moans. He is, up until this point in his career, a loser who is making $50 million, who is going to be a logjam as far as them trying to get to the next level.
His shot selection on Saturday night was insane.
I mean, he is getting to the point now as one of the most frustrating players I have ever watched in the uniform of a team that I root for, because I know how good he can be. And it's just so damn annoying watching him not realize his full potential. I don't know if it'll ever happen. I really don't know. But that is their biggest issue, is the fact that they thought this Towns thing was going to work better than it did, and it hasn't.
That is Greg Giannotti of the fan, Greg with two G's, or in this case, three G's, and that other voice you heard throwing his little thing in was Boomer Esiason. Boomer got his thoughts in as well for like a second and a half. And that's what people are talking. That's how people are talking about Karl-Anthony Towns. He's a big time scorer, one of the better big man shooters of all time, and yet bad defender, doesn't block shots, and when you get isolated and targeted play after play, offensive possession after offensive possession by the Pacers, all your flaws are shown for all the world to see.
Yeah,
and it's going to be something people take into account because the Knicks, with all the picks they've given up to not just acquire him, but Mikal Bridges, they are all in on this roster. And yeah, they made the conference finals. They beat the Celtics, which was the team they built that team for. They built their current roster to beat the Celtics. And you think you beat the Celtics, you got the Patriots coming in. Oh, we got it made. Turns out, maybe don't build a team for just one team.
Yeah, and just the way they play is just so slow, which is a terrible matchup
for the Pacers.
For
yeah.
What the Pacers want to do. And yeah, like I agree with the sentiment that like what makes Karl Towns so frustrating is that he is very talented, but then whether it's the, I guess the on-court demeanor or the on-court just personality, the dumb fouls that Charles Barkley will ask about him to his face, mm-hmm. and then the limitations that he has just as a player on defense, that's what makes him like so frustrating because he really does seem close to being like a completely awesome player. I wouldn't go as far.
I wouldn't call him a loser
because he has been on
rough.
Back-to-back conference finalists.
Yes.
Before that, he was a loser.
Strictly by...
But he was also Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yes, and it's hard to win there. Strictly going by his regular season record, he is an under 500 player. So if you just go
is
by
that
his...
true?
Yes. If you go by his NBA career, regular season-wise, he would, in fact, be classified as a loser.
Eli Manning of... minus the rings.
Yes, so we don't use that word. It's very harsh, but facts say he loses more than he... Okay, let's put it this way. He loses more than he wins in the regular season. He has helped... He's turned that around this last couple years.
Last 2 years have been huge for his win percentage.
Yeah, it'd be even worse if not for the last couple years. So that ends our playoff scapegoat rankings. I guess we'll do one for the finals. I'm sure. Probably will be a rather short list unless there's a complete team collapse by someone. Because if the Pacers get their ass kicked, I won't call them scapegoats. No one expects them to win. Now, if the Thunder lose, there's prime real estate to start calling people scapegoats because people will crush that team if they lose to the Pacers. All right, we'll go to break with that. We'll get into the second hour here shortly. We got some college football stuff to get to. Is your team overvalued or undervalued? ESPN has their analytics team behind it, and then they have their, if you might call them their loudmouths behind it, and some of that is it counteracting, or if that's even a word. We'll get to that in a little bit. We'll also update you on a retirement for your Texans. You probably didn't even know he was on the roster, and now you don't have to worry about it. We'll get to that in the second hour when we come back.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.